Chapter 16. To Moutreau, Pete Garden said, "This is what you have to face and accept. As we play, Mary Ann McLean will be at the board beside you at all times. If we lose, Mary will kill you." Moutreau said woodenly, "I know. It was obvious as soon as Pat died that my life now depends on our winning." He sat massaging his throat and drinking hot tea. "And more indirectly, so do your lives, too."
"That's so," Joe Schilling said.
"It should begin any time," Marianne said, "if I understand them anyhow. They should begin to arrive on Terra within the next half hour." She had seated herself at the far end of the kitchen of the McLean apartment. In the living room, the amorphous shape of E.B. Black could be made out through the open door, consulting with human members of the West Coast Police Agency. At least 6 people were active in the living room now, and more were arriving. "We've got to start for Carmel," Pete said. By vidphone, he had arranged with his psychiatrist, Dr. Macy, at Salt Lake City, for the phenothiazine spansules to be prepared. The spansules would be flown to Carmel from one of the pharmaceutical houses in San Francisco direct to the condominium apartment to be received by Bill Calamine, acting for the group, as he always did.
"How long does it take for the phenothiazine to begin acting?" Joe Schilling asked Pete.
"Once he's taken it into his system, it should take effect immediately," Pete said, "assuming Moutreau hasn't been taking any up to now."
And since it acted to blunt his side talent, that was highly unlikely. The 4 of them, checked out by E.B. Black, left San Rafael for Carmel in Joe Schilling's ill-tempered old car, Pete's following directly behind them, empty. On the trip, almost nothing was said. Marianne stared blankly out the window. Dave Moutreau sat slumped inertly, occasionally touching his injured throat. Joe Schilling and Pete sat together in the front seat. "This may be the final time we make this trip," Pete realized. They reached Carmel reasonably quickly. Pete parked the car, shut off the motor, and the creaky Rushmore circuit, and the 4 of them got out. Standing in the dark, waiting for them, he saw a group of people. Something about them chilled him. There were 4 of them, 3 men and a woman. Getting a flashlight from the glove compartment of his own car, which had come to a halt at the curb behind Max, he shone the light on the soundless waiting group. After a long pause, Joe Schilling muttered,
"I see."
"That's right," Dave Moutreau said. "That's exactly how it will be played. I hope for all our sakes you can go on."
"Hell," Pete said shortly, "we can."
The 4 noiseless figures waiting for them were titanian simulacra of themselves. A Vug Peter Garden, a Vug Joe Schilling, a Vug Dave Moutreau, and slightly behind the others, a Vug Marianne McLean. The last was not as effective, not as substantial as the others. Marianne was a problem for the Titanians, even in this regard. To the 4 simulacra, Pete said,
"And if we lose?"
His counterpart, the Vug Peter Garden, said in precisely the same tone,
"If and when you lose, Mr. Garden, your presence is no longer required in the game, and I replace you. It's as simple as that."
"Cannibalism," Joe Schilling said gratingly.
"No,"
the Vug Joe Schilling contradicted.
"Cannibalism occurs when a member of a species feeds on other members of that species. We are not of the same species as you."
The Vug Joe Schilling smiled, and it was the smile familiar from years back to Pete Garden. It was a superb imitation. The group upstairs in the apartment, Pete thought, the others of Pretty Blue Fox, have simulacra appeared for them, too?
"Correct," the Vug Peter Garden answered. "So shall we proceed on up? The game should begin at once. There is no reason for further delay."
It started toward the stairs, knowing the way. That was the terrible part, the part which sickened Pete Garden. The alacrity of the Vug as it ascended the stairs, its certitude, as if it had made this climb 1,000 times before. It was already at home here on Terra, in the midst of their customary lives. Shuddering, he watched the other 3 simulacra follow equally rapidly, and then he and his companions started into reluctant motion. Above them the door opened. The Vug Peter Garden entered the conapt of the game-playing group Pretty Blue Fox.
"Hello," it greeted those within the room.
Stuart Marks, or was it the simulacrum of Stuart Marks, regarded it with horror and then stammered,
"I guess everybody's here now."
He, or it, stepped out onto the porch and peered down.
"Hi."
"Greetings," Pete Garden said laconically.
They faced one another across the table, the titanian simulacra on one side, Pretty Blue Fox plus Dave Moutreau and Marianne McLean on the other.
"Cigar?" Joe Schilling said to Pete.
"No thanks," Pete murmured. Across from them, the Vug simulacrum of Joe Schilling turned to Pete Garden beside it and said,
"Cigar?"
"No thanks," the Vug Pete Garden answered. Pete Garden said to Bill Calamine, "Did the shipment arrive from the San Francisco Pharmaceutical House? We've got to have it before we can begin. I hope no one intends to dispute that." The Vug Pete Garden said,
"A noteworthy idea you have fastened on to in this erratic crippling of your precogs sensory apparatus. You are absolutely correct. It will go a great distance toward evening our relative strengths."
It grinned at the group Pretty Blue Fox, up and down the game table.
"We have no objection to waiting until your medication arrives. Anything else would be unfair."
Answering it, Pete Garden said,
"I believe you've got to wait. We obviously won't begin to play until then, so don't make it appear that you're doing us a big favor."
His voice shook slightly. Leaning over, Bill Calamine said,
"Sorry, it's already there in the kitchen."
Rising from his chair, Pete Garden went with Dave Moutreau into the kitchen of the condominium apartment. In the center of the kitchen table, with trays of half-melted ice, lemons, bottles of mixer, glasses, and bitters, he saw a package wrapped in brown paper sealed with tape.
"Just think," Moutreau said meditatively as Pete unwrapped the package, "if this doesn't work, what happened to Patricia and the others in the organization there in Nevada will happen to me."
He seemed relatively calm, however.
"I don't sense the ominous disregard of all order and legality in these moderates," he said. "That I do in the Wahpenon, with Dr. Phillipson and those like him, or rather like it."
He scrutinized Pete as Pete took a phenothiazine spansule from the bottle.
"If you know the time phasing of the granules within," he said, "the Vugs will be able to—"
"I don't," Pete said shortly, as he filled a glass with water at the tap. "The ethical house making up these spansules was told that the range could vary between instantaneous full action to any sequence of partial action to no action whatsoever. In addition, it was told to make up several spansules, one varying from another." He added, "And I've picked a spansule at random. Physically, it's identical in appearance to the others." He held out the spansule and the glass of water to Moutreau. Somberly, Moutreau swallowed the spansule.
"I will tell you one thing," Moutreau said. "For your own information, several years ago, as an experiment, I tried a phenothiazine derivative. Had a colossal effect on my precognitive ability."
He smiled fleetingly at Pete.
"As I told you before we went over to Pat McLean's, this idea of yours is an adequate solution to our problems, as nearly as I can foresee,"
Congratulations.
Do you say that, Pete asked, as someone genuinely with us or merely as someone forced to play on this side of the table?
I don't know, Moutreau said. I'm in transition, Pete. Time will tell.
Turning, he walked back into the living room without another word, back to the great game board and the two opposing parties. The Vug Bill Calamine rose to its feet and announced,
I suggest our side roll first and then your side.
It took the spinner and spun with expert vigor. The pointer stopped at 9.
All right, Bill Calamine said, also rising and facing his simulacrum.
He too rolled. For him, the pointer slowed as it came close to 12, then started to pass on toward 1. To Marianne, Pete said, Are you resisting any efforts on their part at psychokinesis?
Yes, she said, concentrating on the barely moving pointer.
The pointer stopped on 1.
It's fair, Marianne said in a scarcely audible voice.
You Titanians initiate play, then, Pete conceded.
He managed to suppress his discouragement. He kept it out of his voice.
Good,
his simulacrum said. It regarded him, grinning mockingly.
Then we will transport the field of interaction from Terra to Titan, it added. We trust that you Terrans will not object.
What? Joe Schilling said. Wait.
But the transforming activity had begun. It was already too late. The room trembled and became hazed over, and the simulacra seated opposite them had, Pete thought, begun to attain a disrupted oblique quality, as if, he thought, their physical shapes no longer functioned adequately, as if, like archaic malformed exoskeletons, they were now in the process of being discarded. His simulacrum, seated directly across from him, all at once lurched hideously. Its head lolled, and its eyes became glazed, empty of light, filmed over with a destructive membrane. The simulacrum shivered, and then up its side a long rent appeared. The same process was occurring in the other simulacra. The Pete Garden simulacrum quivered, vibrated, and then, from the head-to-foot rent, something tentative popped, quaveringly. Out of the rent squeezed the protoplasmic organism within. The Vug, in authentic shape, no longer requiring the artificial hull, was emerging, forcing its way out into the gray-yellow light of the weakened sun. Out of each discarded human husk, a Vug emerged, and the husks teetered, and one by one, as if blown by an impalpable wind, writhed and then danced away, weightless, already without color. Bits and flakes of the discarded husks blew in the air. Particles drifted across the game board, and Pete Garden, horrified, hurriedly brushed them away. The Titanian game players had appeared in their actual shapes at last. The business of the game had begun in earnest. The fraud of the simulated Terran appearances had been abolished. It was no longer needed because the game was no longer being played on Earth. They were now on Titan. In as calm a voice as possible, Pete Garden said,
All our plays will be made by David Moutreau, although we will in turn draw the cards and perform the other chores of the game.
The Vugs opposite them seemed to thought propagate a derisive, meaningless laughter. Why? Pete wondered. It was as if, once the simulacra shapes had been discarded, communication between the two races had at once suffered an impairment. Joe, he said to Joe Schilling, if it's all right with Bill Calamine, I'd like you to move our pieces.
Okay, Joe Schilling said, nodding.
Tendrils of gray smoke, cold and damp, sifted onto the game table, and the Vug shapes opposite them dimmed into an irregular obscurity. Even physically, the Titanians had retreated, as if desiring as little contact with the Terrans as possible. and it was not out of animosity. It seemed to be a spontaneous withdrawal. Maybe, Pete thought, we were doomed to this encounter from the very start. It was the absolutely determined outcome of the initial meeting of our two cultures. He felt hollow and grim, more determined than ever to win the game before them. "Draw a card," the Vugs declared, and their propagations seemed to merge, as if there was in actuality only one Vug against whom the group played, one massive, inert organism opposing them, ancient and slow in its actions, but infinitely determined and wise. Pete Garden hated it and feared it. Marianne said aloud, "They are beginning to exert influence on the deck of cards." "All right," Pete said. "Keep your attention as fully formed as you can." He himself felt overwhelmingly tired. Have we lost already? He wondered. It felt like it. It felt as if they had been playing for an endless time now, and yet they had barely begun. Reaching out, Bill Calamine drew a card. "Don't look at it," Pete warned. "I understand," Bill Calamine said irritably. He slid the card unexamined to Dave Moutreau. Moutreau, in the flickering half-light, sat with the card face down before him, his face wrinkled with concentration.
"Seven squares," he said then.
Joe Schilling, on signal from Calamine, moved their piece ahead seven squares. The square on which it came to rest read, "Rise in fuel costs. Pay bill to utility company of $50. Raising his head, Joe Schilling faced the Titanian authority squatting opposite them on the far side of the board. There was no call. The Titanians had decided to allow the move to pass. They did not believe it to consist of a bluff. All at once, Dave Moutreau turned to Pete Garden and said,
"We've lost. That is, we're going to lose. I preview it absolutely. It's there in every alternative future."
Pete Garden stared at him.
"But your ability," Joe Schilling pointed out. "Have you forgotten? It's now highly impaired. A new experience for you. You're disoriented, isn't that it?"
Moutreau said haltingly,
"But it does not feel impaired."
The Vug authority facing them said, "Do you wish to withdraw from the game?" "Not at this point," Pete answered. And Bill Calamine, white and stricken, reflexively nodded in agreement.
"What is this?" Pete asked himself. "What's going on?
Has Dave Moutreau, despite the threat from Marianne, betrayed us?"
Moutreau said, "I spoke aloud because they..."
He indicated the Vug opponent.
"They can read my mind anyhow."
That was true. Pete nodded, his mind laboring furiously. "What can we salvage here?" he asked himself. He tried to control his plunging panic, his intuition of defeat. Joe Schilling, lighting a cigar, leaned back and said,
"I think we'd better go on."
He did not appear worried, and yet of course he was. But Joe Schilling, Pete realized, was a great game player. He would not show his emotions or capitulate in any way. Joe would go on to the end, and the rest of them would too, because they had to. It was as simple as that. "If we win," Pete said to the Vug opponent, "we obtain control of Titan. You have as much to lose. You have as much at stake as we do." The Vug drew itself up, shivered, replied,
"Play." "It's your turn to draw a card," Joe Schilling reminded it.
"True." Admonished, the Vug now drew a card. It paused, and then on the board its piece advanced 1, 2, 3, 9 squares in all. The square read, "Planetoid rich in archaeological treasures discovered by your scouts. win $70,000. Was it a bluff? Pete Garden turned toward Joe Schilling, and now Bill Calamine leaned over to confer. The others of the group, too, bent closer, murmuring. Joe Schilling said,
I'd call it.
Up and down the table, the members of Pretty Blue Fox hesitantly voted. The vote ran in favor of calling the move as a bluff, but it was close.
Bluff, Joe Schilling stated aloud.
The Vug's card at once flipped over. It was a 9.
It's fair, Marianne said in a leaden voice. I'm sorry, but it is. No psi force that I could detect was exerted on it.
The Vug said,
Prepare your payment, please.
And again it laughed, or seemed to laugh. Pete could not be certain which. In any case, it was a violent and quick defeat for Pretty Blue Fox. The Vuggish side had won $70,000 from the bank for having landed on the square and an additional $70,000 from the group's funds due to the inaccurate call of bluff, $140,000 in all. Dazed, Pete sat back, trying to keep himself composed, at least externally. For the sake of the others in the group, he had to.
Again, the Vug said, I ask your party to concede.
No, no,
Joe Schilling said, as Jack Blau shakily counted out the group's funds and passed them over.
This is a calamity,
Bill Calamine stated quietly.
Haven't you survived such losses in the game before?
Joe Schilling asked him, scowling. Have you? Calamine retorted.
Yes, Schilling said.
But not in the end, Calamine said. In the end, Schilling, you didn't survive. In the end, you were defeated, exactly as you're losing for us now, here at this table. Schilling said nothing, but his face was pale.
Let's continue, Pete said.
Calamine said bitterly, It was your idea to bring this jinx here. We never would have had this bad luck without him. As spinner...
But you're not our spinner any longer, Mrs. Angst spoke up in a low voice.
Play, Stuart Marks snapped. Another card was drawn, passed unread to Dave Moutreau. He sat with it face down before him, and then slowly he moved their piece ahead 11 places. The square read, Pet cat uncovers valuable old stamp album in attic. You win $3,000. The Vug said,
Bluff.
Dave Moutreau, after a pause, turned over the card. It was an 11. The Vug had lost and therefore had to pay. It was not a huge sum, but it proved something to Pete that made him tremble. The Vug could be wrong, too. The phenothiazine crippling was working effectively. The group had a chance. Now the Vug drew a card, examined it, and its piece moved ahead 9 spaces. Error in old tax return, assessed by federal government for $80,000. The Vug shuddered convulsively, and a faint, barely audible moan seemed to escape from it. This Pete knew at once could be a bluff. If it was, and they did not call it, the Vug, instead of losing that sum, collected it. All it had to do was turn over its card, show that it had not drawn a 9. The vote of Pretty Blue Fox, member by member, was taken. It was in favor of not calling the move as a bluff.
We declined a call, Joe Schilling stated.
Reluctantly, with agonized slowness, the Vug paid from its pile of money $80,000 to the bank. It had not been a bluff, and Pete gasped with relief. The Vug had now lost back over half of what it had won on its great previous move. It was in no sense whatsoever an infallible player. And, like Pretty Blue Fox, the Vug could not conceal its dismay at a major setback. It was not human, but it was alive, and it had goals and desires and anxieties. It was mortal. Pete felt sorry for it.
You're wasting your affect,
the Vug said tartly to him. If you pity me, I still hold the edge over you, Taran.
For now, Pete agreed. But you're involved in a declining process, the process of losing.
Pretty Blue Fox drew another card, which, as before, was passed to Dave Moutreau. He sat, this time, for an interval that seemed forever.
Call it, Bill Calamine blurted at last.
Moutreau murmured,
Three.
The Terran piece was moved by Joe Schilling, and Pete read, Mudslide endangers house foundations. Fee to construction firm, $14,000. The Vug did not stir. And then, suddenly, it stated,
I do not call.
Dave Moutreau glanced at Pete. He reached out and turned over the card. It was not a three. It was a four. The group had won, not lost, $14,000. The Vug had failed to call the bluff.
Astonishing, the Vug said presently, that such a handicapping of your ability would actually enable you to win, that you could profit by it.
It savagely drew a card, then shoved its piece ahead seven squares. Postman injured on your front walk. Protracted lawsuit settled out of court for the sum of $300,000.
Good God in heaven, Pete thought.
It was a sum so staggering that the game certainly hinged on it. He scrutinized the Vug, as everyone else in Pretty Blue Fox was doing, trying to discover some indication. Was it bluffing, or was it not? If we had one single telepath, he thought bitterly, if only. But they could never have had Patricia, and Hawthorne was dead. And had they possessed a telepath, the Vug Authority would undoubtedly have summoned up some system of neutralizing it, just as they had neutralized its telepathic factor, that was obvious. Both sides had played the game too long to be snared as simply as that. Both were prepared. If we lose, Pete said to himself, I will kill myself before I let myself fall into the hands of the Titanians. He reached into his pocket, wondering what he had there. Only a couple of methamphetamines, perhaps left over from his luck binge. How long ago had it been? One day? Two? It seemed like months ago now, another world away. Methamphetamine hydrochloride. On his binge, it had made him temporarily into an involuntary telepath, a meager one, but to a decisive degree. Methamphetamine was a thalamic stimulator. Its effect was precisely the opposite from that of the phenothiazines. He thought, yes. Without water, he managed, gagging, to gulp down the two small pink methamphetamine tablets.
Wait, he said hoarsely to the group. Listen, I want to make the decision on this play. Wait.
They would wait at least 10 minutes, he knew, for the methamphetamine to take effect. The Vug said,
There is cheating on your side. One member of your group has ingested drug stimulants.
At once, Joe Schilling said,
You previously accepted the phenothiazine class. In principle, you accepted the use of medication in this game.
But I am not prepared to deal with a telepathic faculty emanating from your side, the Vug protested. I scanned your group initially and saw none in evidence, and no plan to obtain such a faculty.
Joe Schilling said, That appears to have been an acute error on your part.
He turned to watch Pete. All the members of Pretty Blue Fox were watching Pete now.
Well? Joe asked him tensely.
Pete Garden sat waiting, fists clenched, for the drug to take effect. 5 minutes passed. No one spoke. The only sound was Joe Schilling drawing on his cigar.
Pete, Bill Calamine said abruptly, we can't wait any longer. We can't stay in the strain.
That's true, Joe Schilling said.
His face was wet and florid,
shiny with perspiration. Now his cigar had gone out, too.
Make your decision, even if it's the wrong one.
Marianne said, Pete, the Vug is attempting to shift the value of its card.
Then it was a bluff, Pete said instantly. It had to be, or the Vug would have left the value strictly alone. To the Vug, he said, we call your bluff. The Vug did not stir. And then at last it turned over the card. The card was a six. It had been a bluff. Pete said, it gave itself away. And, he was shaking wildly, the amphetamines didn't help me, and the Vug can tell that. It can read my mind. So I'm happy to say it aloud. It turned out to be a bluff on our part, on my part. I didn't have enough of the amphetamines, and there wasn't any alcohol to speak of in my system. I was not successfully developing a telepathic faculty in my system. I wouldn't have been able to call it, but I had no way of knowing that. The Vug, palpitating and a dark slate color now, bill by bill, paid over the sum of $300,000 to Pretty Blue Fox. The group was extremely close to winning the game. They knew it, and the Vug opposing them knew it. It did not have to be said. Joe Schilling murmured, if it hadn't lost its nerve. With trembling fingers, he managed to relight his cigar. It would at least have had a 50-50 chance. First it got greedy, and then it got scared. He smiled at the members of the group on both sides of him. A bad combination, in bluff. His voice was low, intense. It was the combination in me many years ago that helped wipe me out in my final play against Bindman Lucky Luckman. The Vug said, it seems to me that I have, for all intents and purposes, lost this game against you Terrans. You don't intend to continue? Joe Schilling demanded, removing his cigar from his lips and scrutinizing the Vug. He had himself completely under control. His face was hard. To him, the Vug said, yes, I intend to continue. Everything burst in Pete Garden's face. The board dissolved, and he felt dreadful pain. And at the same time, he knew what had happened. The Vug had given up, and in its agony it intended to destroy them along with it. It was continuing, but in another dimension, another context entirely. And they were here with it on Titan, on its world, not their own. Their luck had been bad in that respect. Decisively so.